And I couldn't think of a more timely guest, a special guest, considering the work that Vinny has done as an educator, as an individual that has worked with students, and just her life of service and kindness. And so, Audrey, if you wouldn't mind, please take it away.
Thank you, Amit. That was beautiful. It gave me chills. So Vinya is our I'm really excited to hear from you today. She has kind of been working with kids, especially kids with special needs, since she was really young. She learned about kids about special education when she was in 12th grade and decided to study about it in college, and spent her undergrad years organizing medical camps and cleanliness drives, and then and this is all in India, and then she moved to the US for grad school in Kansas. And then she ended up coming over to California to the Bay Area to work as a founding teacher to start a K-1 program for children suffering with trauma and abuse. And so, yeah, there's just a wealth of kind of experience that I think Vinya had, especially working with kids. But the things that I think about her are kind of her motherly spirit. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, we can hear you, Audrey.
Oh, okay. I guess maybe that was background noise. I don't know. So the things I think about for Vinya are her motherly spirit. Like, she just so naturally wants to give to people, naturally wants to make sure, you know, that kids are okay, that people are okay. And I was kind of smiling about this earlier, that I first met Vinya on a forest call, and then when I actually met her in person, she was just so warm and just so genuine. And in the past few months, I've only known her for a few months, but she's kind of just been like a big sister to me. So, Bella, do you have more that you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, the way you just ended is perfect because I myself can't believe that I only met Vinya about 4 months ago, and that I've only spent one day with her in our life, because and that says a lot about her character and her authenticity and just her spirit. And so it was a circle of sharing in California back in September, soon after Vinya had returned from some time spent at the Gandhi Ashram. And we asked her to share about some of her experiences, even though she'd just returned and she herself really hadn't had a chance to process. And particularly, she went on a pilgrimage with widowed grandmothers and shared some stories from that. And I was just immediately struck by her compassion, but also her deep, deep desire to serve. And as I've gotten to know her over the past few months, I've never ended one of our phone conversations without this instant reflection arising within me that I just feel so blessed to have such an incredible spirit and teacher in my life. So, Vinya, we're really looking forward to learning more from you in the next hour on this call. So I think Audrey wanted
Yeah.
to take it away with the first question.
So to start us off, Vinya, we were just wondering, you know, from teaching kids with special needs to being there for friends in need and serving with service-based, can you describe what service means to you and how service has evolved in your life?
Before I even answer that question, I just want to thank all of you for giving me this amazing gift. Service Base, and especially Forest Calls. I have learned so much from our Forest Calls. I've always tuned into Forest Calls, and I've got so much out of it. And I think what happens in these spaces, and especially when you honor someone by giving them the time to listen to them and to listen to their journey, is you help this person, and you're helping me today to tap into that innate goodness that is so deeply, that's so deeply dug into all of us. You help me tap into it, and you help me see the abundance of love and goodness that's all around. So thank you so much to all of you for doing that and for nurturing me. And thank you so much for all the kind words. So, Audrey, I'm sorry. You were asking me about how my – can you repeat the question?
Yeah. So, just basically from teaching kids with special needs to, you know, being there for friends in need and serving in all the ways you do, can you describe what service means to you and maybe how it's evolved over the years?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I remember growing up, I had a lot of opportunities to our school had something called the Social League Club, and we used to go to schools of children in need and, you know, schools that were serving children from really poor backgrounds, and we got to do a lot of activities and projects with them, and that's when it really struck me that, gosh, there are so many people out there who don't really have anything, and that I think it kind of started there, and I always felt good about going to those spaces and sharing with those children, and, you know, we would take gifts and toys and games and all kinds of things, and just to see those children light up was so inspiring. And I grew up in a village, and we used to have helpers who were, you know, maybe 13 or 15-year-olds who used to come and help us and help my mom with the cooking or doing dishes, and that was another time when I thought of these children are as old as I am, and, you know, they would come in the morning, they would help with everything, and then they would go to the local school, and then they would go to the farm, and they had a really hard life, and just seeing that and seeing the differences in the world and, you know, seeing the privilege and the fortunes, I guess, that I had, and also seeing the difference I was able to make in those days, I think kind of inspired me to kind of continue on the path.
Mm. So beautiful. I can just imagine you growing up in this way. And that kind of brings me to the next question. And, you know, I can see how this background inspired your interest in working with children that have come from sometimes troubled or troubled backgrounds and backgrounds where they didn't have the privileges that many of us have grown up mm-hmm. with or maybe taken for granted. And so I really would like to learn also more about your experiences working with at-risk youth and not only the experiences, but what the working with the children, what they taught you, and, you know, what did you learn, particularly in relation to your own service journey, and what did you learn from working with these children?
You know, so my most of my work has been in working with children, you know, children who are from studying in kindergarten or first grade. So I spent a lot of years working with really young children, and I think, to me, what strikes me the most is there was this, I think I'll give an example. There was this one child who, it was a Saturday, and he got dropped off at school. And then I had another parent who was kind of driving around the school campus call me and say, "Ms. Vinya, I see this student sitting there in the front, and is school going on today? Is something happening?" And it was actually the parent had forgotten it's a Saturday and dropped the child off and just left. And here he was sitting for an hour under the sun and just not knowing what to do. And I went rushing to school, and I see him sit there, and, you know, he looked so confused. And I said, "We don't have school today, and did you eat?" And we were just having a little conversation. And then I called his dad, and I was so angry with the dad, so angry for having done that. And then the dad comes, and let's call this little child Timmy. Timmy just runs to his dad, and he says, "Dad, I don't have school today. I get to spend the whole day with you." And there was absolutely no anger or, you know, hurt or anything. He was just this innocent child who just forgave his dad without even knowing that he was forgiving him or his dad had actually made a mistake. So I think with these children and with, you know, children, especially the children who come with all this baggage of abuse and neglect and trauma, I have seen amazing strength. These children are just, they would have so much happen in their lives just, you know, the previous night, and then they would come into school and, you know, just do what they have to do and try their best. And just seeing their resiliency and their spirit and their strength, it was so inspiring. And they're also very forgiving. No matter how much their parents have done to hurt them or have affected them in such negative ways, they always, always want that connection, and they always are, they're so looking for that connection with their parents, that love, that validation and understanding. And, you know, it kind of, they give so many chances, and it's just amazing to see how these children can do that. I mean, I've learned so much from them. I can go on and on and on. But those are some things that stand out.
That makes me think about, I think maybe Hillary Clinton said it in the past, but this idea that, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, it takes a community. And in the story that you just shared, it makes me think about other individuals, visible and invisible, in that child's life that have maintained their hope and their maybe their positive perspective or response to, you know, moments like that and experiences such as that. So can you share some stories of, you know, people that you've noticed that have contributed to children's success? Hello?
Yeah, sure. I think even before I answer that question, just to give a little background to our listeners. I was working for this center where basically the children who come there are the middle school students. We served children from kindergarten to the eighth grade, and the students who ended up coming to us were actually students who were kicked out of the regular school system because of, you know, very disruptive behaviors or violent or assaultive kind of behaviors, and they got referred to the highest level of care, and ours was a level 12 residential treatment facility in the mental health terms. And so they got referred to us. They would get kicked out of the public school, and then they would go to the next higher level of care. They might get kicked out again because they're not able to manage and contain. They're not actually able to manage there, and then they get, you know, they come up and they come up, and they finally they reach us. And if the children are not able to succeed in a program like ours, they then end up going to juvenile hall, or mostly to juvenile hall, or then they just drop out of school. But the children who do succeed then end up going back. They make it back into the regular school system. They first start with a special day class, you know, and then they get slowly integrated back into the general ed program. So usually what happens is by the time a student reaches us, they have gone through many schools. They have missed a lot of school. They've had a lot of changes, and they have faced a lot of rejection. So it really does take a village. The teams usually in these level 12 facilities, we have like a clinician, we have counselors, we have a psychiatrist, and then we also have volunteers who come in. So there are a lot of people who are working to address the child's needs. And it's just, you know, and even like the bus driver who drops the child off in the mornings, because most of these children do really well when they have predictable routines and when they know what to expect and when there are not really many changes. And so, you know, I remember this bus driver who we had students who came to us from all the surrounding school districts. The school is in Oakland, and we had children come to us from all the way from Union City, from Fremont, far away from Tracy, from Livermore, from all places. And they had a really long bus ride that they had to get into the bus like at 7:30 in the morning. First graders or kindergartners, you know, getting in at 7:30 in the morning. And the bus drivers, I mean, there were some of them who were just amazing people. They would have like some treats for them, and they would give them little hand toys to play with, and they would keep checking in and, you know, sing songs, just little things. And that made a huge difference for the kids because it kind of set their tone for the day. Having seen the other children who had bad bus rides, so then the children with bad bus rides would come with all this. They're already angry and frustrated, and then they would have a bad bus ride, and then they would have to come in and start with detention. But then just those little things where the child with a good bus ride might just feel happy about being on the bus, even if it's like an hour-long ride. And then the cafeteria workers who would make sure that the temperature of the food is just right when the child came in, so they would have a nice warm breakfast and then they could go to class. And the counselors, there are some amazing counselors who work at Lincoln and at many such places. They just, they everything from planning their restroom times and taking them to the bathroom and serving them food and checking in. So there are so many people who go into helping these children, and yeah.
So as you're speaking, I was struck by just kind of the amount of work and the amount of energy and the amount of kind of trials that these kids really put you through. And so I was just, and thinking about working with, kids and especially special needs or at-risk kids in general, I've noticed there's just so much burnout in that kind of area. So I was just wondering about if you could share a bit about your experience with, if you've experienced kind of that sense of burning out, and then thinking about service in general, whether it's that kind of social justice-y aspect of service where you're serving kids with, physical, very demanding needs, and then just the kind of idea of serving just in general, anyone, anywhere.
That's a great question, Audrey. So what happens when you work with children who have so many significant needs is, I think when you come from a place of abundance and when you come from a place of, taking care of yourself and being very balanced in your own self-care and spiritual growth, it becomes easier for you to serve in these really, really demanding circumstances. You're talking about children who, I remember just walking in the first day to work and someone cussing me out. And I was just blown away. So there's just so much of anger. Our cars get broken. I mean, the level of violence that happens is just unthinkable. And you get burnt out so easily because you're constantly giving yourself on a daily basis. And I think a huge part of my healing, I got completely burnt out working in the field, and so burnt out that I couldn't even work for 2 or 3 months. I had to take a break. And that's when I got, that's, I think, around the time when I started kind of exploring and coming to know about service space, and service space has been such a huge part of my healing process. And, reflecting on that, I think the main reason is earlier when I was thinking about, there was a huge shift in me, and the shift is when I was thinking about service or when I was thinking about working for the school and creating all these changes, I had such lofty goals and I wanted to do so much for the school. And I think earlier I came from a place of wanting to prove myself and wanting to prove, part of me was wanting to prove how good I am at doing this. And, part of me was trying to, trying to feel good about and trying to fill some maybe areas of lack in my own life. So I was trying to fill it up with feeling good about work and feeling good about all the nice things that I was able to do. You get so much you get a lot of fulfillment and you get immediate gratification from working with children in these circumstances. So I think I was coming from a place of lack. And then as I moved on and, just getting to know about service space and being on forest calls and our meditation and everything else, you start seeing, you kind of start filling yourself up. And, I just started noticing that when you serve from a place that's completely, when you serve from a place of abundance, it's so different. It's just so different. And I think also for me, I had some job changes and I went through a really tough phase where I wasn't accepted or my job wasn't accepted for what it was. And I had a lot of criticism and it was a really hard time in my life because my whole identity was my work. And, when I was told I wasn't doing a good job or I wasn't doing a good enough job, it just completely shook my world. And now when I think about it, I think the reason why it shook me so much was because I was looking for so much validation from work and I was looking for results. And now when I look back, I'm just so thankful for having those opportunities and experiences, because you start realizing it's about, you know, when you come from that place of abundance, it's really about sharing that goodness and sharing from that space of abundance that you have in you. And then it doesn't matter what people think or what anyone else says, because you know you're doing whatever you can, and you know that you have the best intentions of everyone else in mind. So my whole service, idea of service, has taken a huge, huge shift. And that's also from, you know, the examples of all these amazing icons and heroes we interact with in our service-based community.
It's really beautiful. Kind of shifting a little bit, you know, what struck me was what you said in your response when you serve from a place of abundance. It's so different. And it makes me think about this past summer when you were with Manasagna and all the pilgrimage. And can you talk more about what you did exactly and share some of your experiences, your insights from that, and how that also contributed to your shift in how you see service?
Sure. I had gone to Manasagna for about 2 weeks last summer. It was such a beautiful report from, you know, the Ekatvam, and the children were all here. For those of you who don't know, Manasagna is part of Gandhi Ashram, and it's this beautiful organization that does a lot of amazing things with children and a lot of service activities in the slums around Ahmedabad. And so the children from there had come on a concert here called Ekatva, and that's when I got to know about this beautiful space, and that's kind of what initiated my interest in going there. So when I was there, the community had organized this pilgrimage with 108 really, you know, old slum women from the slums to the to Rishikesh and Haridwar, which are pilgrimage sites in the north of India. And I think they had actually asked about, had actually wanted it as a life wish. This was like their ultimate life wish. They wanted to go to Rishikesh and Haridwar, and the river Ganga flows through it, the river Ganges. It's supposed to be one of the most sacred rivers according to Hindu mythology, and they wanted to take a holy dip in the river. So it was this beautiful journey with 108 women and some very inspiring service heroes, Jayesh Bhai and Nemo, who did Ekatva, and so many people. So we went on this journey, and so we were going on the train, and, you know, being with someone like, and I'm, Jayesh Bhai may not be happy if he hears me say this, he doesn't want us to talk about him and what he does, but then there are some people who exude so much of goodness and service in their every breath, and just being around them, you learn so much, and he's one such person. And so we were in this train journey, and he was sitting with us, and I noticed it was a day and a half train journey, and I noticed whenever we, you know, we had beggars or vendors or anyone who passed by our berth, he would make them sit next to him, and he would connect with them, and he would talk to them, and he gave them so much respect and so much dignity, and their face would just, they would just have this immediate transformation. You know, they would come in a little unsure, kind of cowering, and then once Jayesh Bhai starts talking to them, they would just, like, you know, sit with so much confidence, and they'll be smiling by the time they leave. So I was so inspired seeing that. And then there was this one child who was singing and begging for money. He must have been 6 or 7 years old. So he was just walking through the different birds and, you know, singing these songs, using these two stones. It's amazing how he does it. He had these two stones in his hand, and he was beating them like a little drum and making this amazing music and singing along. And he came to our birth, and he was singing, and he just had this really doleful-looking eyes. There was just so much sadness and, you know, depth in his eyes. So he stood there, he sang, and he had this scar on his face. And then Jayesh Bhai said, "Why don't you sit with us?" And, you know, in his usual customary way, he put his hand on this child's head, and he was talking to him and asking him what happened, and, you know, how did you get the scar? And this child said something about, I'm not sure actually what the cell said, but they were just having this conversation, and then Deshpai looked at his nails and he said, "Oh, you need to get your nails cut, because if you don't cut your nails, all this dirt will get into your food and then you'll fall sick." And then he turned to ask us, the volunteers who were with him, if any of us had a nail clipper. And I had one, so I said, "Can I clip his nails?" And then Deshpai sent him to me. So this child was sitting with me, and I was clipping his nails, and and the child was just like so, he had no idea what was going on. I mean, he was just amazed that here are these people talking to me and sitting with me and clipping my nails. So he just looked really surprised. Like, he just had this look of astonishment in his face. And then I clipped his nails, and then I said, his fingernails, and I said, "Why don't you keep this nail clipper and use it whenever your nails grow, and take care of yourself." And then he left. And after he left, I was sitting with Nemo, and I told Nemo, "You know, I should have cut his toenails. I don't know why I didn't do that. I thought of it, but I didn't do it. And I kind of feel bad that I didn't, and I should have." And then Nemo said, "No, I don't think you should worry about it," because after this child had gone, Nemo had kind of followed him. I think he was going to use a sink or something. And then he said he saw this child sit in this really discreet place in the compartment cutting his toenails. And I was just amazed. And then in just a few minutes, this child comes back with another child who was also begging in the train. He came back with him, and he was like all smiling, and his face was so lit up, and he was talking about us, and then he ran. So that kind of really stood out. I have more, but I don't know if we have time.
That's a beautiful story. And actually, I think it's getting close to 10, so Amit would be like to open up the queue for questions.
Yeah, absolutely, we can. I think we'll just keep it fluid as well. So I'm going to open up the queue for Circle of Sharing and for individuals that want to ask Vinya a question. And then in the interim, Bella, Audrey, if you have some more questions, we can kind of continue with that, and I'll just jump in as callers start ready with their questions. So if you have a question for Vinya, please push *6, and you will be added to the queue, and we'll go from there.
Okay, sounds great.
I had one quick thing to say about Manav Sadhana before we move on, if that's okay.
Okay. Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So, we stayed in this ashram with these Majis, the mothers, and we stayed in this ashram, and there was this one day when, we decided, okay, maybe we should, it was actually Jayeshbhai who said, let's give them tail malish or an oil massage for their heads. Let's just do it. And then the next day, people brought in hair oil and all kinds of things to give them all a head massage. And I went in late, but I saw what was going on. When I went in, there were all these Majis sitting around, and the volunteers and Jayeshwar and everyone else are like giving them these head massages. And then the Majis, the mothers, they turned around and said, "We want to do the same thing to you." And then they sat the volunteers and everyone else down, and they were giving them this massage. And it was just a beautiful sight, it was such a beautiful sight of just seeing how the giving and receiving kind of losing its lines and melting into one. It's such a beautiful thing. And then the other quick reflection I had was, I went thinking I will be serving the mothers and, serving them food, taking care of them and taking them around. And I had all these ideas in my head when I went. And then the more time I spent with them, I realized I was actually getting so much from them. They just had so much love to give us. And I just felt like I had, all of a sudden I was adopted by 108 grandmothers who were absolutely family. They were so much like family. So that's the most important takeaway for me, how when we truly do something from a heart of love, you receive so much, and then there really is no giving or receiving. It just becomes this one beautiful, one beautiful melody of sorts. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So,
Audrey, before you go on, I'm gonna. We have a caller in the queue that has a question.
Sure.
Great.
Vinya, hi. It's Christopher Lohman calling in from cold and rainy Portland. Can you hear me okay?
Chris, hey, we can hear you. Hi.
Oh, wonderful. Good. So I don't have a question for you. I just wanted to share a couple stories of my experience staying with you the other week in the Bay Area, just to give everybody, you know, another taste of the level of generosity and the hospitality that you offer people you cross paths with. So I had two clear memories. The first one was the first afternoon after arriving and getting to your place, and I was tired, so I decided to take rest, and I was out in your living room just on a, you know, on a cushion on the floor. And then you went to do the same in the bedroom. And instead of sleeping on your bed, there was one available. You decided to sleep on the floor because that's what I was doing. And, you know, I'll always remember that. And I even shared about that story at the Wednesdays on Friday at Casa de Paz, that if you're looking for a definition of service, that in that very small act of, you know, just sleeping on the floor because you didn't want to, you know, upset some kind of relationship with me, that really is where you find a beautiful definition of service. So that was one. And then the other one was when we went to hear John Perkins speak at the Green Festival in San Francisco. And John Perkins is a famous best-selling author, and he was on stage presenting, and he was coughing a little bit during the speech, and Vinya could tell that he needed some water, and she hadn't met him yet, so she started asking around, does anybody have water, does anybody have water? And she actually got a bottle of water, and she was going to deliver it to him on stage. I don't think you did, but just that concern, like Audrey was telling us before, that motherly love, and we were just looking at her in amazement that she was really getting ready to, you know, take care of him like that. It was just so amazing. And then we had dinner with him later that evening after the festival, and he was staying in a hotel in San Francisco, and we were in Fremont. She was saying, oh, John, you know, I know you're all by yourself. You don't have your family. If you want me to deliver a meal to your room, you know, I'm happy to do that. And he was just completely blown away by that, you know, Vinya's sincere generosity and that sweet spirit that she has. So, Vinya, it's been a pleasure listening to you on the call. Thank you so much for sharing yourself.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's really true. I'm really struck by, I think Vinya is you're definitely one of those people who doesn't know how much warmth you add to the world. And just listening to you share stories from your experiences in Men of Sadman and with the children, I'm just curious, what anchors you, you know, like how do you, hello?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Oh, okay. So how do you integrate, you know, that fullness that you described, the filling up, that abundance? How do you kind of integrate that into, you know, daily life when you're kind of just going through the daily grind, or when you're in spaces that don't feel so abundant? Do you have a spiritual practice, or, you know, what kind of things do you try to do?
I think that's something I think that is something I struggle with, and I'm making small efforts and experiments. One thing that I recently started doing is, you know, let's say if someone is kind of doing something which might be unintentionally hurting me, or which is not completely aligned with the way I think or do, I start thinking of them, I start imagining them, kind of picturizing them how they would look when they were a child. And every child is so beautiful. So when you think of someone as a baby, then you're like, you know, all you can feel is love. It works most of the time. It really works most of the time. But, yeah, that's one thing I do. And the other thing is, you know, just tapping into this amazing community. I mean, I know I keep saying service space, but honestly, I've had a lot of downs in my life, and I think what healed me and what's helping me and what nourishes me, honestly, is Service Space. It has meant so much to me. I mean, I've been with Service Space for maybe the last 7 or 8 months, and I've just learned and grown in so many beautiful ways, and that's because of all these invisible hands. You know, there's this amazing thing that this community does. We just exemplify and glorify these very humble acts of service. I honestly don't think I've done much, and there's so much more to do. But people at ServiceBase, these amazing people, all of you and everyone else that at ServiceBase, have a way of glorifying it and celebrating that little goodness in us. And then you obviously are inspired to do more. You just want to keep doing more because you're on the receiving end, and you just want to share that abundance and love and, you know, the good feelings that you get. So I think those are the things that have helped me.
Mm-hmm.
And Audrey, yeah, your flowers, you keep tagging people with flowers, and I get such beautiful flowers from you. So I have so many of those. I'm just so lucky that I'm surrounded by such angels.
Audrey is a delightful tagger. I happened to come home the other day and find a lovely package in the mail. It was marked anonymous, but there's only one person that makes those kind of cookies. And so very, very much appreciated. Vinaya, this is Amit. I had a question for you. You know, you just said that, you know, there are times where you're down and you love the inspiration that comes from ServiceBase, but I was wondering if you could maybe take us through some of the challenges you felt, whether it was with, you know, any of the, whether it was in, when you were at Manasadhana, when it was with when you're some of these students, some of the low points that you felt, and then how you worked through them. Because I really think that's always an important source of growth for individuals.
Right. So one of the, one of the hardest times I had at work was when I was trying to break a fight between two middle schoolers, and they were so angry and filled with rage. And I kind of went in to break the fight because I had a relationship, I had a connection with both the students, and I thought they'd listen to me in that situation because they had listened to me in past situations when they were in a crisis. So I walk in and I try to break the fight, and the children were so blinded by rage that they didn't even know who was talking to them or who was stepping in. And they just started attacking me, and they were slamming me against a wall. And I was just shocked, and it was a very traumatizing experience. I was completely shocked, and here they were like just kind of slamming me against the wall. And then I managed to kind of get away from that situation and walk away and recoup myself. And I think for the next few days, I couldn't just face any child at the school, and that was really hard for me because I've always wanted to work with children, and I've loved it and I've enjoyed it so much. And that was the first time when I didn't want to be around children. I was just so terrified with what happened. And then so I took some days off, and I was thinking about it, and then, you know, I was thinking, if that one experience of me getting slammed against the wall, if that shook me up so much, what about these children who have had repeated assaults and violence in their life? I mean, they've had so much of violence and abuse and whatnot. They've gone through so much. And in fact, one of those kids who did that was this is a little gruesome, but he was so badly assaulted. One of his fellow inmates at a foster home had used an iron rod and a red hot iron rod and burnt his back. So they've gone through so much. And when that struck me, I was just, you know, there was just no way I could feel anger or hurt or anything. What I went through was nothing. And in fact, they felt safe enough to show that they were still upset, and they were trying to tell me that they have so much of healing to do and they need all this love. I think violence comes from a place of love, and I mean, comes from a place of a lack of love. And it's time for us to, you know, it's just a reminder for us, okay, this person is needing something from us, and it's time for us to give it. And that's also kind of, it also ties into what happened yesterday with the shooting and with the violence. It's a reminder to all of us that this world needs so much of healing, and this is the time for us to show our solidarity and our love, and this, and to tap into that, you know, that inbuilt goodness that we all share, that divine love that we all have. This is the time for us to outpour that and show that. So, yeah, that's one thing that comes up.
I guess, you know, but, you know, in that, you know, especially having worked with a lot of kids that have come, you know, from sort of very challenging environments, I mean, how to really get that message across to them when all they've seen is that, right? I mean, it might, on one side, it might be easier for some of us to talk about hope, that divine spirit, mm-hmm. that love, that loving environment, all of those things. And, mm-hmm. And yet to try to explain that or to, you know, expect someone that doesn't come from that environment to have that type of hope, I mean, how do you really get that across?
I think for these children, you know, when they come from so much instability and when they've seen just violence and anger and fear and neglect and all these negative things, when they come into these spaces that we create, when they come into these spaces that are truly dedicated to their well-being, the children start seeing it. It's really the power of those small acts. I remember, you know, the one thing I did when the children would come into the classroom, and I had a kindergarten first grade class, as I had said. So the first thing I did when the children came in was I would always ask them to wait outside the door and knock to let me know that they're there, and I would walk out and greet them. I had a little morning ritual where I would say, okay, nice to see you here. So good, very good morning to you. And you have five choices. Do you want a hug? Or do you want a flying kiss? Or do you want a handshake? Or do you want to just a nod? Or do you want something else? Like, what do you want? And welcome to class. That's so nice to see you today. And just from that little thing, I would know what kind of a space the child is coming in. You know, if they said they want a hug, okay, so they're looking for connection and they're feeling safe and all is well. If they're looking for a handshake, well, maybe I'm fine, but I need some space. If they're saying, well, I don't really need anything, I just need to go in, they're like, okay, something has happened maybe. And I mean, it's you know, it's not for a sure thing, but it's just those little things we can do. And it made a huge difference for them. I would have children who told me, I don't want a Christmas break. I don't want a holiday break. I want to come to school and I want to be here. And that tells you that they felt safe and they're looking for that, you know, they're so looking for that stability and safety and love. And they changed. We've had students who graduated and actually made it back to a regular public school. And they do it because there's so much strength in their spirit. And, you know, our human spirit is such a, as beautiful as we are so delicate, and everything kind of affects us. May it be good things, may it be love, may it be negative things. It all leaves these marks, you know, these engravings of love and engravings of negative things that have happened to us. And the only way to fill up those areas, those wounds, is by, you know, like, fill it up with love. Give them as much of goodness as you can. And then they turn around and they show success. It's not just the school or places that can do that. We also need parents who are willing to make that, you know, who are willing to be invested in the change. There are so many people, but I think it really comes from that unconditional love. And,
Thank you.
Hi. This is Gayatri.
Hi.
Hi, Vimya. Great listening to you. Thank you so much for all the wonderful experiences, learning, and lessons. Lovely, absolutely. I'm going to keep them all in mind and use them, yeah. Thank you. The question that I had was, I don't know how much you've worked with children in India. I'm just asking you, are you able to compare the ecosystems that are provided in India for the children that are traumatized, abused, and ill-treated with those that are provided here? Could you make a comparison? Would be good to know. Thank you.
Thank you, Gayatri. I don't think I'll be able to make an informed comparison. There are so many factors that go into it, but from the little experience I've had working in both the places, I think the challenges we face are so different. The challenges, the children come here because, you know, it has a lot to do with, like, the children are born mostly to, like, teenage mothers who are not prepared for pregnancy, and then alcoholism and, you know, drinking alcohol when they're pregnant. So then it affects the fetus, and then the children end up getting fetal alcohol syndrome and ADD and ADHD and so many things. So the challenges are very different. And also here you have drugs, and not that you don't have all that in India. I just think the challenges are a little different. So there's a lot of problems because of drugs, and a lot of the fathers are incarcerated because they don't have a job, all kinds of things. And I think in, at least in the places that I've seen in India, and I've only really worked in one city, so I'm really just talking from that very limited perspective. I think the challenges there are more from, like, maybe alcoholism to some extent. You might have children who are getting abused and who come to these systems, and mostly poverty. So the challenge is different, but again, and also I think pregnancy is treated very differently in India. You know, people tend to be more careful about pregnancy, and they seem to be more prepared. But I feel like I'm making these blanket statements from my limited experience. So, yeah, I think the challenges are very different, but we could totally apply these principles of care and best practices in both the places.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Have a great day ahead.
It's been wonderful listening to this conversation, and I think the previous caller touched on my question. And you may not be able to address this completely, Vinya, but I'm struck by how different types of trauma may be affecting children differently. I remember attending a program by children who were victims of war in Kenya, and they were living in orphanages, and despite the ravages of near starvation and poverty and war, they seemed to rebound in an atmosphere of love. Given the children you work with, it seems to me that what may be compounding the problem is simply the untrustworthiness of the environments they live in. There is a parent, but sometimes and not maybe in the right way. Can you speak a little bit more, perhaps, to how these two types of children or these types of circumstances may require different ways of dealing with each circumstance?
Just to make sure I understand your question, are you asking about working with children who come from, like, maybe situations in India that I was speaking about, and then children here? Is that what you were asking about?
Well, in a more global sense, children who are really in the midst of trauma, which is probably more pervasive, such as a war or a
right.
war zone or something like that, versus children who are in trauma, but it seems to be more personalized. Is there a difference in way these children may be treated, or are you even aware? Are there the same methods applied? Is it all about creating trust and love, or are there different things that need to happen?
Oh, I see. I see what you mean. Thank you for your question. I think, you know, so love and trust, yes, and then also giving them, you know, some children need psychiatric intervention. They might need medication. Some children need some intensive psychotherapy. So there are many things that go into it. I think for children who are affected by war, it's more of creating those, you know, those large-scale, large group, like whole group interventions where you're addressing the trauma that's felt collectively as the group. So they, you know, group therapy sessions and giving them an opportunity to build as a community and to heal as a community, and also some level of individual therapy and attention. Whereas when it comes to children who have those more personalized experiences, it's really working with them on an intensive individual basis. And it's also, those lines are again very gray, because, you know, children who are affected personally can also be in those, they might also have been affected personally by loss in these large scale situations. So I think the lines are very gray, and it's they have a lot of, all these children who are affected either in these big, you know, collective things that unfortunately happen, or on a more personal level, it's really addressing the trauma and in that they've affected, I mean, that's affected them in their life, and being able to see how much of effect it's had. And you have to be able to work with them on an individual level.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I hope that was helpful. Thank you.
Oh, extremely. Thank you.
So
From kids to kind of, I'm just kind of struck by your story about fingernails. and I was wondering about that kind of sense of abundance that you had mentioned. And where do you find that, and what does it look like?
I'm thinking about it. I think it's, and can tell me if I got the vein of the question right. I think it's really, like I had said earlier, when you come from a place of lack, what you're looking for is this for validation from the outside, right? Like you do good things, and you do these good things because you feel good about doing it, and also because you feel, oh, wow, I've done something good. So it comes from a different space. But when you are sharing your goodness, and when you're sharing it because it comes from a place of, because you feel so much love, and you come from a place of having felt so much love, and having known how it feels to, you know, to be on the receiving end, and when you come from that place of wanting to give because it felt good to receive, you know what it is, and you feel complete yourself, and you want to share that, you want to share it from that place, I think is different. Is that kind of what you were referring to, Audrey? I'm not sure I'm answering your question.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. I guess, like, I don't know. Maybe I didn't really have a clear question in mind. I just was secretly wanting you to share more stories. But I think, do you have a poem to share?
I do. I thought I can do that towards the closing.
Okay.
Go ahead, Audrey.
No, I don't have any more questions at the moment. Do you, Bella?
Yeah, I do. It sort of relates back to growing up. Well, you grew up in India, and then you actually started teaching. I know you did a lot of volunteer work in India as well, but teaching in a completely different sort of social structure here in the U.S. But my question's more about your roots and your family and the values that they imbibed in you and the expectations that they have of you. And, I think this might resonate with a lot of us on the call. Sometimes our families might not always understand some of the decisions we've made and choices that we're continuing to make in reflecting in the sort of the background that we grew up in. And so how has your family challenged you, and how do you try to find some sort of balance between, the way you grew up and the expectations your family has of you and the culture you're working in and living in now and your own personal journey?
Mm-hmm. Growing up in India and coming to work here, study and work here, it's just, it's two very different worlds. So earlier it was really hard to kind of get acclimatized to this part of the world, and it's so different, right? You get used to so many different things, and even I know that I've had a lot of conflicts, personal conflicts with the Eastern values and the Western values, and trying to find where do I stand in this, and what is my identity now, because I really felt, for example, I come from a family, I think I'm the first girl who's ever stepped out of my country and to study. Actually, I think I'm the first person in my whole family who stepped out of the country to study, just who's come abroad to study and all that. So it also came with its own set of high expectations, because I had cousins who were looking up to me and who wanted to, they would always say, well, Vinya Chichi is doing so much and we want to be like her. But also when I'm 31 now, and once I hit 25, the whole pressure for marriage and everything started, and there's all these expectations that come, right? Okay, you're like 30 plus and you have to be married and a lot of those things. So it's, but also being in this part of the world, you learn so much about yourself, and you grow so much as an individual. And there's just so much that you want to do, and you feel like you have to do, and it's been a hard balance. It has been a hard balance trying to meet my parents' expectations and also not being able to meet many of their expectations, because they would want me to follow certain of the social norms that I have kind of grown up in, and I'm not really following that right now when it comes to things like marriage. But also on the other side, I've just been so thankful because they always allow me to have my own choices. In coming from a place where my cousins and everyone else got married when they were in their early 20s and who wanted to study and who couldn't study and go, you know, further through college, my parents always encouraged me, and they never really wanted me to be an engineer, which was kind of the collective dream of many parents there. And they allowed me to do special ed, which was not known about at all. And they allowed me to be my own person and to make my own choices. And they let me come here and study. And they have always encouraged my independence. And, you know, I think it takes a lot of courage to live alone, especially when you come from being in a very sheltered background where you're always with your parents and where, you know, you come back home by 6 o'clock and where you're sheltered so much. And they've instilled a sense of, I feel I'm really bold and courageous because of that. And if I were to call my dad, I called him a couple of weeks ago because something was going on, and I just called him saying, I'm really scared and I don't know what to do. And he was just so calm, and he said, well, you can get through it, face it. And he gave me a lot of wisdom. And it's hard being a dad far away from, you know, your daughter, giving that kind of support and strength when you know that your daughter is going through some really tough times. So they've always given me this sense of courage and hope, and let me be who I am. So, yeah.
Next caller.
Namaste, Vinya, and everyone on the call. This is Versha calling from New York. Vinya, I've not met you yet, but I kind of feel like I know
Versha?
You.
Versha, do you mind if I ask you to speak up just a little bit? It's a little hard to hear you.
Sure. Hello, everyone, and Vinya, thank you for sharing your story. I actually had a very simple question, just whether you teach or work with children with special needs and developmental disabilities, and what your training in India encompassed, because I know there's some differences here in the U.S. compared to in India.
Mm-hmm. So what I did in India was an undergrad, a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Ed in special education. And it was really the BSc focused on all disabilities, and the Bachelor of Ed focused on visual impairment and hearing impairment. And then here I did my grad school, and my focus was the grad school focus was actually early childhood special ed, so children who are born with, you know, disabilities, and early, like, prenatal care and postnatal care. But then my work has primarily been in, like, the kindergarten through eighth grade setting. Thank you.
Thank you for that question, Marcia, and thank you, Vinya, for sharing yourself with us this morning or afternoon, wherever you are. I just feel very grateful for you, and I want to really thank you for sharing yourself so honestly with all of us. It's not always easy to talk about, you know, some challenging moments in your life like that, like being slammed against the wall by kids, or the moments of cutting fingernails and just. Just the ways you've kind of gone through your journey the way you have, it's really a gift for all of us who are also kind of wanting to serve or wanting to do good in the world. It's such a gift for us to hear your own stories and your very real, real stories. So with that, I am excited to hear this poem that you have to share, and then I think Amit will lead us in a moment of silence to close.
Thank you, Audrey. Thank you so much. This is a very quick poem that this is written by an anonymous poet, and I remember reading it when I was in seventh grade, and it's It's helped me so much, and I want to dedicate it to all of you for taking the time to listen to me. And I hope this poem reminds you of just how special you are. So I'll read it now. You are special. In the entire world, there is nobody like you. Since the beginning of time, there has never been another person like you. Nobody has your smile. Nobody has your eyes, your nose, your hair, your hands, your voice. You are special. No one sees things just as you do. In all of time, there has been no one who laughs like you, no one who cries like you. And what makes you laugh and cry will never provoke identical laughter and tears from anybody else. You are the only one in God's creation with your set of natural abilities. There will always be somebody who is better at one of the things you are good at, but no one in the universe can reach the quality of your combination of talents, ideas, natural abilities, and spiritual abilities. Through all of eternity, no one will ever look, talk, walk, or do exactly like you. You are special. You are rare. And as in all rarity, there is great value. Because of your great rare value, you need not attempt to imitate others. You should accept and celebrate your differences. You are special. Continue to realize it's not an accident that you're special. Continue to see that God created you special for a very special purpose. He called you out and ordained you to a calling that no one else can do as well as you. Out of all of the billions of applicants, only one is qualified. Only one has the best combination of what it takes. That one is you. That, just as surely as every snowflake that falls has a perfect design, and no two designs are the same, so no two people are the same. You are special. Thank you so much to everyone for listening to me, and I hope all of you know that all of you are so special and so beautiful, and maybe all continue living and learning and growing.
Thank you.